No, I don't know. I think it's a biological thing that you would get it no matter what type of clothing you wore. I don't think that your clothing is determining.
But like, what does it look like when there's no pants on it? Does it look like part of like a children's playground ball or a hippity hop? is it like an eighth of a very 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 large orange?
Is anyone really attractive naked?
You look nice today. A Journal of Emotional Hygiene.
Oh, it's great.
Stay Hungry?
It's called Stay Hungry. I don't think you can find it on like the, you know, like internet really that easily. Maybe Netflix, I don't know.
That sounds like a Netflix streamer to me.
It wasn't for me. You'd think it would be available if they have the, you know, it in digital. But it's boy, is it delightful. And both Jeff Bridges and Sally Field were smoking hot in the 70s.
Yeah.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger, not only a bodybuilder, you may not know this, also an accomplished bluegrass violinist.
No, you're making that up. That's bullshit.
The thing that I love about it is that it's the 70s, and it takes place mostly in this sort of old-fashioned, you know, 70s gym, just when bodybuilding was becoming popular. It was part of the spate of bodybuilding-related movies from the 70s. This one just sort of mixed in a layer of...
A spate means one, right?
A spate is a gathering of bodybuilder movies.
He was in Pumping Iron, right? Was that the movie he was in?
Mm-hmm. That might have been a... Was that a documentary or was that the first?
It's a documentary. It's a documentary. He talks about how much he enjoys marijuana.
Yes. I think you might even see his penis in that movie. Or is that just still photographs in my Bible?
You just call it the book.
It's in Leviticus.
Would it spoil it for us if you told us a little about what happens in the movie?
Sure. So the movie is basically Jeff Bridges and his highfalutin cronies at the club. And of course, Bridges is sort of the black sheep of these guys. He's got a heart. He's born to money. He's not really comfortable in that kind of world. But his friends, you know, have sort of convinced him to go in on this idea that they're going to develop a whole block of, I want to say, Atlanta. And he's just, the only thing he has to do is go buy out this old gym. And of course, you know, he goes there and he gets to know the people too well. And before you know it, he's pumping iron with the guys. The first time you encounter Arnold Schwarzenegger, in fact, he's in the gym lifting weights in a Batman costume. And you don't find out why he was doing that until about an hour later. And he says, it makes it fun.
It adds a little humor to the workout.
That's it. Just that's the whole movie in a nutshell. Like Jeff Britt, imagine this, okay? Two bench press benches about 2 feet away from each other. And Jeff Bridges on one, on his elbow, on his side. Arnold Schwarzenegger on the other, on his elbow, on his side. And they're just talking like two girls. That's the movie.
Just hanging out in there, relaxing between sets and just talking about stuff.
Oh, they're just relaxing and talking about, you know, what's important to them and the big meet that's coming up. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger takes Jeff Bridges out into the countryside where he knows a bunch of hardcore bluegrass musicians. They just literally walk off the road into the bush and find a clearing full of people drinking moonshine and fiddling. And then Schwarzenegger picks up a violin and just starts jamming. And I want to say that Schwarzenegger learned expert-level bluegrass fiddle for this movie.
You know, it's the movies. They can make pretend like he plays the violin and he's not actually doing it.
No. I can tell.
I think the hardest part would be his neck.
They had sort of a cutaway violin for him that he could just sort of just stick in there and it just
stuck. Like a Les Paul? They like kind of just took a big... Yeah, big slice out of.
Oh, it's amazing.
I want to see an entire video of just Arnold Schwarzenegger's face. It's just his close-up of his face while he's playing the violin, because I bet he looks ridiculous.
Adam, to your point, I think ever since, I want to say, Airwolf would be my first encounter with obviously fakely played instruments. I think in that he played the cello. Mm-hmm. And that was so easy to tell, because it looked sort of like he was working a bellows. Or, you know, like you find like the girl with the bass guitar and she has her limp right hand kind of draped across the strings. It's easy to tell when they're playing, when they're not really playing.
Wow.
Oh, it is the best movie. And it's not at all like making fun of Arnold Schwarzenegger. In fact, Arnold Schwarzenegger won a Golden Globe for his performance in that movie. Best debut performance or something like that, which is, I think, no longer given as an award.
Was he retarded? It's not as easy back then, you know, to find a bluegrass expert as today. They probably had to take him someplace and put him up at like a Days Inn.
No, this is before, you know, NPR embraced bluegrass as, right, as, you know, something that everybody should hear and understand. So I would say this is probably when bluegrass was still sort of the equivalent of like hip hop for rural people.
Don't you think Deliverance, though? Deliverance kind of put bluegrass on the map, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. And that was right before disco, if I'm remembering my music history correctly, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I know this wasn't what you studied in school, but it's true. And if you look at any chart, it'll tell you go straight from bluegrass right into disco.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it was a pretty crazy time, though, because I think back then, you know, well, Arnold Schwarzenegger, I think, was seen as kind of a national curiosity. He was one of those things we'd eventually have, a William the Refrigerator Perry, or we'd have
Andre the Giant.
Andre the Giant, exactly. And I think he was a curiosity. Now, I remember now in Conan, he was dubbed, if memory serves.
Was he really?
Oh, was he?
Because it was so impossible to understand anything he was saying. And I don't remember him playing violin at all, or James Earl Ray. James Earl Ray? James Earl Jones. Who's the one that killed Bobby Kennedy? Is that Sirhan Sirhan?
John Wilkes Booth, I think.
You know, here's the thing. I missed this. Adam, I just got to guess that you missed this too. And there was just this, something happened after the age of the blockbuster, and you just stopped having movies that made no sense. I mean, you get movies now that are like not that great, or, you know, they don't have a third act. Like, no movie has a third act anymore. But you know, it used to be you'd have something like Cannonball Run, where it was just really, really hard to understand. But there were a lot of people that required to make it happen.
Just a big party movie. It seemed like it happened spontaneously. Like, they didn't even actually write anything. But they got Burt Reynolds, they got Dom DeLuise. And they made a fucking movie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think if you get Burt Reynolds, a Trans Am, and a couple kegs, and I think really you just got to print posters at that point.
Yeah.
Awkward cake.
There was this one guy who was like he became famous as the guy who taught Burt Reynolds all his stunts.
Oh, really?
And then there was like a whole stuntman genre.
There was a movie called Stuntman, I think.
That was an overrated but good movie with Peter O'Toole, right?
Hmm.
But, you know, it was also a lot like that Steven Spielberg movie with the truck. I'm telling you, there was a time when movies were just, they weren't stopping people.
Boy, that movie sticks in my consciousness. Just you saying it reminds me of six scenes sort of simultaneously layered on top of each other from that movie.
Which one? Duel?
Duel. Yeah, that's a scary movie.
I've never seen it.
Oh, really? Of course, to see it at whatever age I saw it at, which was probably, eight, something like that, was really what made it scary and sort of bizarre and like a dream. It's sort of like the dream you have and you go home and it's not your home. It's that kind of level of just, you're disconnected from what you thought you knew.
It's like Karate Kid meets Christine. Like the trucks fight, what happens?
The guy's just chased by a semi.
Yeah, that's it. That's Duel.
And then that preceded Jaws, right?
Yeah.
Wow, man. He had some weird glasses back then.
So you never see the driver in Duel, right? I think I've only read about it.
That's right.
That's fairly experimental for, I guess Spielberg wasn't Spielberg at that point. He was making art films still, right?
They were all, those guys were all like so, I say all of those like six names we all know, were like so influenced by, you know, like New Wave.
Yeah. They call them the film school brats. That's what that generation of...
The Coppolas and Lucases and all them.
Yeah, them. Because they knew too much.
I'd like to see Lucas go back and see what he could do with Breathless.
Chewie, is that you?
Just go back, knowing what we know now and what we have now, or maybe a Jules and Jim. I'd like to see him go back and see what he could do and maybe gin it up a little bit, you know? Maybe when they run over the bridge, I think maybe that woman looks a little bit more like a man, you know? Give her a better mustache and a hat that fits. Because it's very, very obviously an attractive woman.
You're saying, just do these classics with little CGI, like you throw in maybe like a computer generated sidekick.
I'm out of my depth on this one, Adam. Adam's the one who knows the industry. But is that your sense, Adam? How hard would that be? Let's assume you got the rights, and I don't know, you got a little Mac SE sitting around. Could you go back and could you improve some of those films?
Yeah, I think he could screw it up real good. I think that'd be fun. I think we could do that, probably.
Yeah, this is actually a great idea because, you know, over and over we come up with these ideas, and I remember we had that one movie related one where we'd recast movies, but instead of the leading actor being Bruce Willis or Peter O'Toole or somebody, it would be Adam.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, those movies require us to reshoot the whole thing. And so we'd have to have $80 to $100 million up front just to demonstrate that we have enough money to recreate Die Hard. But in this case, I think maybe we start with, you know, like Blockbuster's going out of business, right? Let's just go buy a couple of dozen DVDs that they're liquidating for $20-$30. And then we take the existing movies and we layer in a sidekick. So you take like a Ten Commandments, mm-hmm. and you layer in like a, you know, kind of a hunchback mulatto guy with a lisp, mm. sort of following along behind Charlton Heston when he comes down from the mountain with the tablets.
Would he be full sized? Are you thinking like he would be? Would he be adorable or like a golem kind of thing, or would it be like a valet? I think you and I, Scott, we just have to strike a lot of the deals, and by that I mean figure out people who were too old or senile to sue us. But then I think Adam could really take that and run with it. You know,
well, certainly we're the deal guys.
Yeah,
I think there's something there.
You know, I got to tell you, I think a lot of movies, you take away the sidekick, it's not the same movie anymore. If it was just Stan Laurel crying, I mean, that's not amusing,
right?
You know.
Right.
You're gonna want a fat man there hitting him.
Oh, geez, now that we say this, it seems obvious to me that we just create one sidekick character to put into all these movies.
He can go into any of them. That's a tremendous idea. Yeah. Wow.
Because then, you know, every movie becomes, instead of I don't know what we call him, Razzle Dazzle. You know, so instead of instead of the Ten Commandments, it's Razzle Dazzle and the Ten Commandments, right? So
yeah.
Everything becomes. Or whatever this guy's name is, meets this other thing.
You know, we're trying to avoid spending. What did you say, Scott? You don't want to go as high as $80,000 to do one of these, right? You want to keep it on kind of the low end, right?
Guys, we're not. I'll be honest too, okay. and we should probably address this in our regular budget meeting. But we're basically out of money.
Hmm.
It's my understanding that when you do this CGI stuff, you run into problems. The more you want it to look, you know, like something, you know, it's got to be flat and have shadows. And so I'm thinking maybe Razzle Dazzle, like he's maybe like a 20-sided die. Because that renders fast, right, Adam?
Yeah, exactly. It renders.
Maybe he's old, so some of the numbers are rubbed off. You don't have to do they call it embossing. What do you call that?
So who's going to voice Razzle Dazzle? What, all three of us simultaneously?
Razzle Dazzle.
Well, this to me is where we get that 10x kind of, you know, seventh wall hook in, is we find somebody who's got a voice that's marketable.
Yeah.
I don't think we have that.
No.
Somebody, Razzle Dazzle, somebody current. He's a 20-sided die and he's current. Does he have stick legs, or is he like a pill bug? Like, how does he move? You know, maybe it's different from movie to movie, but here's the thing. We could do some treatments. Or I'm sorry, Adam, that's your terminology. Yeah. But it seems to me we could make several different kinds of dice and just see what looks good. You know, and if we get something like you know, the fish that saved Pittsburgh, and we can put a 10-sided die in that, you know, I think that's going to look good. Maybe that's Capricorn. I don't know.
So let's take a step back and let's say Razzle Dazzle versus Kramer versus Kramer.
That's good. What are we gonna? I don't understand. What are we gonna do? Who's gonna get the kid? Let's let Razzle Dazzle decide.
Well, maybe just to save money and like I said, we're basically out of it. What if instead of an actual voice or instead of a person reading, like you just alluded to, maybe we just do some sound effects like keys jangling?
Oh, we can do a lot with that, like off screen. There's a movie I'm sure you guys know that I'm talking about, Mac and Me. Have you guys seen Mac and Me?
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm,
yeah. Because mm-hmm. Scott, I mean, apart from the fact that he's, you know, rubbery and goes, it's pretty. Right. It's pretty much. I mean, that's one of the 50 worst movies I've ever seen on a lot of levels. But he makes a whistling noise, and he eats. What does he eat? Oh, he doesn't drink Coke. He eats. I think I don't know. He eats Funyuns or something. but they. you know, somebody wanted another crack at that, alien snack vertical.
So you're saying we got to integrate some sort of a brand placement in Razzle Dazzle?
They sure could. Maybe he could sit. Maybe he could sit in a Marc Jacobs bag, or maybe it could be something where he rides up in a Lexus. But, you know, the thing is, I think the movie doesn't have to be good. I think if Razzle Dazzle's in it, I think people are just going to show up. They're going to say, how is he going to move around? Hmm. You know? It's, you know, maybe somewhere very hilly and people are curious about how he gets back up.
I think this is going to be huge. I think the problem is going to
be huge.
We're going to run out of movies to put Razzle Dazzle into because everyone will want Razzle Dazzle to be in the movie from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. If I'm hearing you, you're saying that there's going to be vehicles. You're going to see people coming out of the woodwork to offer Razzle Dazzle work.
Oh, gosh, yes. I think you start to see the franchise become one of just absolute explosive viral mortification.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't want him to do stuff that's dirty, though. Is that okay?
Mm.
Well, no. Okay. All right. And you know what? It's early. Let's keep it in the blue sky for now. But I'm just saying, I don't want him to, like, you know, I don't want somebody to sit on him and disappears or something.
Well, you know, at some point we'll have to introduce, you know, Razzle Dazzle Jr. Dizzle Dazzle.
Rizzle Dizzle.
Rizzle Dizzle, his
as you know, voiced by Snoop Dogg.
The thing that I like about this is that it really starts, literally as small as possible to make a movie, you know, where we're just basically stealing a DVD from Blockbuster. And then, mm-hmm. you know, filming it on a TV and then just holding a 20-sided die in front of the TV, filming it with our camera and then jangling our keys off screen.
Man, the thing is, people don't want to spend a lot on entertainment these days. And really, it's good because I think their standards are low.
Mm-hmm.
And if we got some kind of a lovable character that
you
could sell.
This is brilliant.
He fits into a fun meal or a happy meal. He fits in just fine. He could go right next to your apple crisp.
Yeah, exactly. You put him in the apple crisp. And then you eat him. And then, you know, you almost choke on him, but then you don't. And he comes out. And then instead of, you know, buying every movie starring Razzle Dazzle, or instead of Razzle Dazzle having to be on the set of every major motion picture made from 2013 onwards, instead, you just make the same movies that you were going to make before, and you just give every person in America their own, you know, Razzle Dazzle to dangle in front of the TV,
mm-hmm.
and like a couple of sound effects, and then they make the movies.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking maybe we start with Stay Hungry because it's new and it's fresh material. We could all come... clean, sort of clean, except for you, Scott, because you've seen it. But.
Sure, sure.
No, I'm ready to go in clean. Or Nashville would be good too. You know, well, the thing is, that's a lot of clearance. You know,
yeah,
That's a lot of people that are probably looking for a paycheck right now.
Yeah, Amadeus maybe as a start out of Africa. I don't know. I feel like Grammy winners from the '80s would be a good place to start. Gandhi,
Oscar winners.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Oscar winners from the '80s.
Moonstruck.
Oh boy,
Moonstruck. You, Adam. I think that this is finally your chance.
Snap out of it.
Hands in a derby.
There's a lot of sidekicks. There's like a whole sidekick culture. And you know what I've noticed? When my daughter watches these really, really awful, you know, children's shows, and mm-hmm. I find myself thinking, boy, this show is really, really, really bad. Mm-hmm. And it'll be this show from 10 years ago. And then I'll see an episode from 5 years ago, and I'll go, wow, this show got so much worse. And I have no idea how it got, I don't know if it got focus grouped, but now suddenly everything's a puppet.
I my sense is that the core issue there is that children's programming tends to be created by committee, it seems, more than adult programming, which at least has, at least at some level of the process, there's sort of a king of the story.
This started with the Sesame Street. That's where all this started.
Oh, for sure,
you know,
for sure.
It's all just based on, you know, like surveys and stuff. So, I mean, I had that feeling. I mean, there's this one episode of Blue's Clues that's like, it's like puppets and mescaline. It just makes no sense. They have an entire episode dedicated to Blue finding the key that opens the special box where he finds the room where he turns into a puppet and learns how to talk. And it's my daughter's favorite episode, and I have to leave the room when it comes on. They jam in like 11 new characters in 3 minutes. It's like, hello, I'm something you draw on. I'm a dinosaur, and I'm about, man, I'm the chest full of clothes that you wear. And it's like, oh, God. But the kids don't seem to mind it, you know? They don't give a thought to us.
I would be terrified to try to create children's programming because I would always feel like I'd be, you know, somehow programming in to believe the worst possible thing about humanity on accident.
Mm-hmm. On accident.
Well, you know, they're so impressionable, and I don't have kids myself. You guys would, you're probably less terrified of their malleable young minds than I am.
I hope they become more impressionable, I'll tell you.
Oh, boy.
Mine's a... She's a hard nut to crack sometimes. Oh, but, yeah. You know, maybe, what's his name? Flim Flam? What is his name?
Razzle Dazzle?
Razzle Dazzle. Maybe Razzle Dazzle could be one for the parents. You know, maybe it's like Soupy Sales kind of thing. Or, you know, it's kind of like a nudge and a wink kind of thing, you know?
Maybe you have glasses just for the adults. The adults put on the glasses, and then you can see Razzle Dazzle's big dong. But the kids can't see it.
Or like, maybe, did you ever go through Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus? Have you done that one?
Is this a ropes course?
It's a book. It's an endurance thing. Basically, this pigeon wants to drive the bus, and you keep yelling back at the pigeon, "No, you can't drive the bus." And I'm thinking it's something like a Hamburglar kind of thing, where every time people turn around, Razzle Dazzle's trying to put something in somebody's drink in a mischievous way, and then everybody goes, "Razzle Dazzle," and they quack quack, and he goes. and he slips it back into his secret pocket in his sleeve. Well, wait, he doesn't have a sleeve. He's dice. You know?
Yeah, we might want to rethink that.
I can't write this whole thing. Okay, maybe he's got a robe.
We're pretty committed to the dice-based character at this point, unfortunately.
Oh, really?
Well, I made some calls, and I have some prototypes in production right now. So I agree with you, Adam, though, to get back to the kids thing. It feels like, well, first of all, so much children's programming is focused on trying to in some way impart a lesson, right? Mm-hmm. And when it doesn't do that, then as a parent you're worried that you're just letting your child watch TV.
Yeah, it's candy, it's junk food.
Yeah, it's junk food. Yeah, and then you see something like Teletubbies, which like it or don't like it, it's the unbelievable genius of the adults who created that show, and yet were so able to pry open the lid of the id of a 20-month-old baby and get inside it and move around. Who knows what the fuck they're saying to those babies? They could have in the last 10 years programmed an army of now 10-year-olds.
Right. It's like when you put the electrode on your brain, you smell ham. You're saying you get in there and you leverage science.
And
maybe they don't even know. Maybe it seems like it's a show about, you know, about rabbits that are, you know, trying to help people, you know, with disabilities. But, you know, doesn't have to be, right?
No, yeah. And at some point, like Manchurian Candidate style, they're all just they're all just basically drones who have now all been run through the same program. And at some point, you know, some whistle goes off and they all snap on.
Sleeper cells, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that whistle's being blown by Razzle Dazzle.
Oh, Razzle Dazzle.
I'm a professional voice actor.
Razzle Dazzle. Does he have eyes?
I think that would humanize him unnecessarily.
Where's the whistle come out? Adam, you know, you're the one who's going to have to vet this. You're the one with all the contacts inside the industry. What do you think? Can you sell this? Can you sell Razzle Dazzle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can I? If not in a movie, form, maybe a game?
I'm not sure how I'd use dice in a game.
Yeah, that seems untenable.
I don't know. Like, just take a leap with me. If it's an iPhone app or something that you could. Mm-hmm. I mean, for instance, what about taking your favorite iPhone app and inserting Razzle Dazzle into, like, Instapaper? You could put Razzle Dazzle in Instapaper. All of a sudden, it's a whole other level of engagement with the content you're reading, because then there's like a little object that's completely distracting you from whatever it was that you were setting aside to read in the first place, because he wants to read. Boring.
Is he cute or is he menacing? I'm still kind of getting my head around that.
We'll let the market figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not for us to decide. The artist doesn't normify.
No, I just stretch the canvas, you know?
Boy, I wish I could be the kind of artist who just does the prep work, you know? Like, just, you stretch the canvas, you put the, what's that called?
Gesso. Yeah, that's a lot of work.
Oh, but it's delightful. There's no pressure at that point. When you're putting the gesso on and stretching the canvas and stapling the canvas onto the frame and doing all that fun stuff, there's no worry about what you're going to put on it when you're putting on the gesso and preparing it.
What happens if you don't put the gesso on?
I think it bleeds through. I think that's what the gesso's for. The gesso's to keep it from keep the paint from bleeding into the canvas.
Did you guys go to art school or something?
No, I'm just gay.
Yeah, same.
Me too.
Have I ever told you guys about how I get over my fear of flying? I wouldn't say I'm afraid to fly anymore. I'm a nervous flyer now, but not afraid. For quite a while, I was very scared whenever I'd fly, and I would say it probably didn't keep me from going anywhere, but it kept me from being comfortable when I would go somewhere. But the thing that I would do when I would fly is imagine what the chances were of me dying on the airplane, like one in, I don't know, let's say one in a million. And then I'd imagine a die with a million sides, and then rolling that die, and then if a one came up, then I would die. That would mean the plane would crash. That was always very helpful.
Because it seems so outlandish?
Right. It sort of made the odds physical.
I wish I had done something that scientific. Whenever I felt like I needed to like feel the hand of God, I would come up with some kind of a test. I mean, some kind of like, if an acorn falls from that tree, you know, or whatever. You know what I mean? Like some kind of the next blue car, I'll call her or something like that.
Right. Sure. And that would probably not work as often as it should have. So you probably didn't do the thing that you were trying to do.
No.
Is that right?
We didn't even have any oak trees. Are you afraid of flying, Scott? I've flown with you. You seem very happy. You seem like you, you play video chess. What do? You seem like you're very comfortable.
I've gotten over it. I still have techniques to get through certain phases. You know, I do some counting. I do some praying. Make a quick will. I do the probably still do the roll a die in my head thing once every four flights. I talk incessantly to the person next to me, which makes the time go faster.
But you don't masturbate at all before takeoff?
You mean in my seat?
I don't know. We don't always sit together.
Yeah, well.
But no, it just strikes me as something that you might enjoy.
That's what the blanket is for.
Exactly.
Yeah. Get a blanket.
Yeah, you don't want that blanket. Buy those blankets.
Am I right?
Absolutely. Well, is that's going to keep you warm? I mean, you know, come on. You know, I got socks that are thicker than that. If you know what I mean. You know, why don't they just give you a moist towelette? Here, why don't you have a pillow and a moist towelette? That'll keep you warm.
I think the consequence of being so scared to fly, at least when I was that scared, was that it would make it so much more beautiful when I was in the air and sort of aware of every moment and every second of being suspended several miles up. So, you know, looking out and looking at the clouds and looking at the land below and seeing all that stuff, I'd say I've probably done a good job of not taking that view and just the fact of air travel for granted, because it's kind of crazy. Now that I live so close to the airport, I get a every couple of minutes reminder of how common it is, too.
Did they make that clear to you, Scott? Did they make it clear exactly how close you were to the airport?
Well, they do this thing where they have you sign some papers about how close you are to the airport, but your realtor sort of hypnotizes you with her rings and her boutonniere, and you're sort of like Mr. T, you know, before like they give him that drugged hamburger. So the realtor just gives you some sort of thing that makes you okay signing a million papers in a
Mr.
row.
Mr. Simpson, I just need you to sign the municipal convenience waiver. This is going to be real quick. Oh, look over there. Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm. What you got there?
I got sea salt and vinegar.
Oh, a pop chip? Is it a pop chip?
No, I can't do pop chips. Oh, yeah. Look at you, Mr. Virgin America.
It's good stuff.
They were out of salami the other day.
They don't. On Virgin?
Yeah, I was bummed.
They don't have.
Oh, yeah. Well, they should. They said they did. It said they had it on the screen.
I don't know about Virgin. I mean, last time I went,
hang on.
Yeah, what?
All I'm saying is last time I went, they had one of those Chinese hanging ducks when I walked in. They had a guy there with the ducks, and they had like a whole alleyway made as if it were Chinatown, and you could go in and pick what you wanted, and they'd pay and they'd be rude, and that was like half of the Airbus 319 was this stupid alleyway that they had mocked up.
Yeah. Well, the problem is sometimes the chickens block the electrical outlets, and you got to ask them to move.
Yeah, and they're kind of rude about it, and they you know, pretend not to understand what you're saying. And
oh, they understand.
And they bring you a separate menu.
It's an inscrutable airline. I've always said that. The waitresses on there are so much cuter and nicer than they are on other ones. I there's a lady on there. She's like she's at least 60 years old, and she's probably the cutest lady I've ever seen in my life. And she talked to me about computers.
I think you mean lady air prostitute. I'm sorry.
Lady air prostitute.
I think you said waitress, and I
have you ever seen the waitresses on United, man? They, man, I don't. It's I can't imagine a decade when that worked out.
No, very cylindrical.
Yeah, exactly. It looks like they're like mostly like I don't know, navy blue ballast, you know. And maybe it's a legal thing. Maybe there's just too many slender people on the starboard or something. I don't know, but they're all mean, and they got that.
That's my favorite Coldplay album, Navy Blue Ballast. That's good.
It's gonna tip. It's gonna tip higher. Ballast.
I am impressed by how airline attendants do so radically differ from airline to airline.
Oh God, it's unbelievable. Are you being serious? Is this a bit? Because I'm being dead fucking serious.
Oh no, I mean, I just remember like Northwest is like peroxide and rabies.
Southwest is pasty.
Pasty but cheerful and khaki.
Yeah, very cheerful, but khaki shorts and creamy pasty thighs.
And that lumpy thing under their belly buttons.
United is like state worker who's been eating popcorn chicken for 40 years. And like, I don't know how, could your shoes get any flatter? God, but I'm virgin. Gosh, it's like I've ruined you in my dreams so many times. And still, you bring me salami.
And finally,
being a TSA person, no disrespect, but that is actually literally my vision of hell.
Do you mean to actually do the work of
well,
the TSA?
Well, specifically, we might have talked about this before, but I've been flying a lot lately, and so I've had this experience a lot. I've had the experience of being in line, and you know, I'm kind of that guy. I'm that guy who's ready.
Sure.
My record, I have, well, knock on wood, I have like 2 unbroken years of not making a beep.
You call that picking a beep?
Right? I've been skipping the beep. But, you know, but the guy who has to go, you know, once again, ladies and gentlemen. And so you get the guy who's going up and down the aisle. Going, ladies and gentlemen, once again, if you have any liquids, 3 ounces of bottles, any kind of liquids, or traveling with children, going to the bathroom. And then, of course, some woman comes up, and she's got a fucking 40-gallon jug of wine and a missile launcher. You know, and she's, I don't know, like wearing a tinfoil hat and like the sirens are going off. And it's like, you know, that guy.
And she's fat.
Do you know what it's like to search a fat person? Have you ever had to do that, Scott? You need like calipers and a friend. That's hard. You know, in hospitals, they throw razzle dazzles to see who's going to operate on the fatties. Did you know that? It's called adipose tissue. And there's, you cannot even get to the part that has the problem until you get past all the adipose.
God damn, it's almost like, difficult mode in a video game.
It totally is.
Did we ever talk about the panis before?
No, I just love to hear you say panis. The mysterious third gut.
Boy, that's yeah. Speaking of Southwest shorts, the khaki shorts on Southwest are designed to highlight the panis.
Yeah, they've got like an 1/8 pleat in there for you specifically to cover the gunt.
That's a great Bergman film, by the way, if you ever get a chance to see it.
the eighth pleat.
It's a tremendous movie.
is it P-A-N-N-I-S? Is that right?
It's P-A-N-I-N-I-S.
Oh, paninus, panuninus, panini.
Oh, it's like the ciabatta bread. It's like that. Okay.
You grill it, and then it's Italian. So a pananis, is that right? Pananis. That's that lesbian novelist.
I thought it was Brazilian.
This has been You Look Nice Today, featuring Lonely Sandwich, Scott Simpson, and Hot Dogs Ladies. Thank you.
What do you think? Does he have a fault or a weakness? Or do you think that'll develop, or do you have one in mind? Because I think for really, as Robert McKee would say, he has a whole chapter about dice. And if you want to have something that's going to develop an arc, he calls it an arc over time, you've got to have some kind of a flaw. Well, you know what I mean? It's got a...
Right.
Do you think there's any problems? I mean, does he...
So just as an example, let's say like a James Bond, for example, like another franchise character, his flaw would be what? Women? Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, so Razzle Dazzle could be like a serial rapist.
A serial rapist. And no,
Is it too dark?
It's a little on the nose.
Maybe just a little fondling?
We could do it classy. We could do it classy. I think maybe if he doesn't get caught, I don't think it's a problem.
Where were you, Razzle Dazzle? Really? You're gone for a while. That's good. God, that's good.
It really is.